Hey, Sue, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, I got another question for you. So if you end up with that big of a crop in Iowa and you've got that much corn left in Iowa, do you think there's that much corn to begin with that's left from last year?
Yeah, I kind of do.
And so the question then is this, from the Eastern Corn Belt perspective, we're probably looking, the further east you go, the not as good crop as it might be, potentially. But it's not a bad crop. But that the export market would be awfully good. USDA was predicting, what, 150 million more for the coming year than they were last year.
Absolutely.
So the question is this. How wide does the basis have to get in Iowa for that those extra bushels to go further west and out through the Pacific rather than trying to draw down out of the Eastern Corn Belt through the Mississippi River? And does that make any sense at all?
Well, the one thing, you know, we've noticed that some corn has been pulled into the Eastern Corn Belt just to kind of get producers through.
Right.
Now that's kind of abating, and I kind of suspect that basis could run 60 cents under.
In Iowa, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that would historically
that would be super bad. But that it could run that way.
Yeah, historically that wouldn't be all that unusual. It would be unusual in the post we built ethanol plants era, but not in the pre
pre
era, right?
Exactly. There's another thing that has me concerned is, and I'm curious to see how this plays out, is the fact that if you have all that supply, these ethanol plants and the feedlots too are not buying aggressively corn ahead. You know, for a long period of time, because they don't want to keep the capital outlaid so long because of poor profitability.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how that plays out with the ethanol plants, because they do have ability to store corn.
Yeah, but not very much corn, though, generally. They can store corn, but
it's usually like a week's
worth or something like that. Most of them don't have very much storage, do they?
Up here, some of them do. Some of them will have, like, these big rounds, just like I was mentioning, where they could maybe handle a million bushels.
Yeah, but I was thinking that generally what they had on hand was enough to run 3, 5, maybe 7 days. I don't know about that, how far, but they were constantly in need of corn, and that they were tied into the grain elevators in the local area for the most part for that reason.
True. I'm not sure. I know we have some in our area here that tend to sometimes have piles that last through the winter or part of the winter.
Right.
But I think that I think the big thing is going to be if, you know, farmers have put up a ton of storage, huge, huge storage bins. And I think that if they tend to go ahead, I think they've moved off the farm. You know, so I think their bins are pretty ready to go. But I'm thinking if we end up with a big problem with, you know, like a frost freeze to where it hits in the dough stage, and this is a big if, we don't know, but if it does, that could, or even the later stage, let's go later stage, where it's more important for the grain farmer that because now he can't store it very long, and you already have elevators with some old crops still sitting there, they fill up fast. I'm wondering what's going to happen. I think grain's going to have to move. And so that could give a pretty good opportunity to the export market, other than poor quality corn isn't going to go very far.
Right. So the export.
And I'm not sure how, if we were to get corn frosted in that cracked stage, I'm not sure what that means in quality for ethanol. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean,
yeah.
I just.
I have no idea on that, because that could be a big. And I'm, you know, there are so many. And
on
you
the,
look
on
at,
the spot market. I wonder about that. I just don't know.
I just don't know. I will say this: when you look at you know, this is a plus for us that Argentina is still dealing with some drought, and so as they go into their corn planting season. And soybean planting season, you know, because they didn't get all the wheat acres in. You know, they're number two exporter in the world for corn. And here could be a situation that could be kind of like an ace in the hole for us if you commingled that along with a frost freeze, all of a sudden you have Argentina dealing with some drought yet, maybe, you know, where do people go to get corn? And, you know, you have a lot of feed wheat in the world, so they can do that, but yet there's other uses for corn. Where are they going to go?
Yeah.
But, and that would be positive to corn at some point. I just right now don't see corn doing real well. You know, one thing I didn't get a chance to say, but this year we're going to have, next Tuesday coming in, the new marketing year, we're going to have on soybeans over a third of our estimated or forecasted export sales on the books for soybeans. And what's interesting is that I went back and I looked at the last time we had such an aggressive export sales like that, and it was the year of 1997-98. And in that fall, November beans put their harvest low in the first 2 weeks of July, just like this year. And then the September contract came up and made higher highs. Well, September contracts made higher highs today. Now they got to get over the August contract, because that year they did. Well, the August contract high was 1241.5. And then the November beans came up and equaled the top of the year. Didn't make higher highs per se, but it sure equaled it. What was interesting was the corn, while the beans were staying so strong, corn tended to move a little bit higher through the month of September, and then all of a sudden it just sort of separated the path and it fell back into December. And I'm wondering if that isn't going to be the case again, you know, because there is this seasonal on wheat where usually around the 30th or 31st of August, wheat will put a low in, even in a barrier, rally through a portion of September, if not all of September, and then peak out in early October and then fall by the wayside. Well, in years when you have the carryout production increasing, or the carryout increasing in U.S. wheat, but demand for U.S. wheat is decreasing, in those years, the March contract will tend to take out whatever low it puts in September.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, we need to really watch that, because the low last year on December, the week of December 5th, or December 8th, whatever it was, got down to 455, and the low this month so far is 457.75, and we only have one more day to go.
Right.
And, you know, we've got a 100-month moving average at 442. And I don't know, you know, if we get a little hint of a bounce going here in September, it's going to be interesting to watch, because if we take that low out in September and we start, but it almost looks like it could be a potential double bottom, but, you know, wheat, when it starts to leak, it leaks pretty good. But I'm wondering if wheat starts to do that push, and then you get March wheat coming back down and taking out these lows later on, that isn't going to be helpful to corn either.
I just wonder, with all of the new bins out there, and we've sort of faced this problem. We've sort of faced this problem, but I don't know how much of it we've faced in Iowa. I don't know whether Iowa put more bins up this season or last season.
They put a bunch up last season, but there was more still went up this year.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, farmers will look at it and say, why would I sell?
When I've got storage.
And I'm covered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not covered with you, but I'm covered. I've got crop insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe 25% of them got the acre coverage as well.
Sure.
Why would I sell? So it'll be interesting to watch how basis reacts as farmers maintain, I think they'll maintain, the number of bushels they have in ownership on the farm.
Yep.
I don't know how much it could or might change the number of bushels that are sold over this scale.
You know, another thing.
And that'll be interesting to watch because that'll be very interesting to watch because it will have a direct impact on those guys who signed up for the acre programs
mm-hmm.
because, well, and other USDA programs too, because the cash, average season's cash price is weighted with the monthly sales.
Mm-hmm.
And so those, despite the fact that the marketing year hasn't started yet, the average season cash price has already been weighted with sales that have been made for the new crop.
That's right. And, you know, another thing, too, a lot of this crop insurance, unless you get a disaster, anything that's revenue assurance, you know, they're not going to pay out this year, I'll bet, because, you know, if you look at February, you had markets extremely cheap in February. In fact, beans, November beans, put the low in for the year so far in February.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't going to be paying. And, of course, if you get hit with a frost, they certainly won't be paying, other than crop loss, maybe in that light of it. I don't know. It's an interesting year because there are so many little avenues here. And another thing that could throw another key into it is if the EPA does raise the mandate on corn,
yeah,
ethanol, to 12.5% or 12%,
yeah,
you could have 4.5 to 4.7 billion bushels of corn going just for ethanol.
That would be pretty easily done, I would think.
I think so, too.
I think that looks like the compromise that's going to come out, don't you think? I mean,
yeah,
they're at 10 now. They won't go to 15, but 12.5 or 13 or something,
yeah,
like that, 12 even.
A compromise,
be,
yeah.
That would be eat through a lot of corn. How much did you say? How many extra bushels?
It should take us up to about 4.5, maybe 4.7 billion bushels.
Yeah, so another half or three-quarters of a million, billion bushels more than we're already using.
Yeah, today I had a client tell me, he was out and he lives in Nebraska, but he was at some test plots of Pioneer, and he told me, he says, Sue, you aren't going to believe. He says, I'm going to ask him how tall this corn is, but he says, I'm guessing this corn's every bit of 12 to 13 feet tall. He says, you cannot believe it, what it looks like. And I don't know if that's a new hybrid, triple stack, whatever they've got going. I don't know. You know, because they've talked about corn that could possibly yield up to 300, 350 bushel that would be coming before super long. But he hasn't gotten back to me yet today. But he
Did
said,
they have, that might be a cellulosic thing.
I don't know.
You
but,
want more growth?
When he told me that, I said, are you sure you're not looking at Jack and the Beanstalk?
Well, I've been in the bottoms. I can remember years ago being in the bottoms and watching the corn come across the top. I mean, the tassels come across the top of the combine. I mean,
yeah,
they were just that tall. So it's there and it can be done. It may be just a fact that there was enough water there to really shoot it up that high.
It may be. He said that the irrigation pivots bend it over as they go by. I can't believe it. That to me
I would think it's probably taller than that. It's probably 15 or 16 feet.
Well, and I'll tell you what, if our field corn this year is anything like what our sweet corn crop was, it's awesome. Ears.
You know, that's what Paul Cooley said. He says that anybody who's been out, and harvested their sweet corn crop knows what kind of corn crop they've got out there.
And absolutely.
It's a big one.
I remember when we froze corn here a couple of weeks ago, I said to my husband, I said, are you sure this didn't cross-pollinate?
Yeah.
Because it were such big ears and deep kernels.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, we haven't had corn like that in I don't know when we've had corn like that.
Yeah, my father does the same thing. He said the same thing, too. How do you go about doing your freezing? Dad just goes out anymore, and he picks it, shucks it, rinses it off, and freezes it. He doesn't do anything else with it.
Really? Does it get cobby at all tasting?
No, it does not, he says. And I've had it. I've gone and picked it up out of the freezer in the middle of the winter from him, and it. Yeah, it doesn't matter whether you stick it in the microwave or put it on in a pan or whatever you do with it. It's really pretty good. I'm surprised at how well it stays sweet, but it does. And he doesn't do anything to it.
I'll be dog. We take we use turkey fryers, and we do two turkey fryers this year. Next year, I think we're going to do three. But then in each turkey fryer, we put 32 cups of corn, sweet corn, cut off the cob raw. And then we put 12 tablespoons of sugar.
Yeah.
And then we put 6 teaspoons of table salt and then 2 sticks of butter or margarine. and then 2 cups of water. And then it just steams and you let it get sort of that light goldish look.
Right.
And then you take and chill it down and then we just stick it in Ziploc bags.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dad's method is much easier.
Yes, easier. Trust me.
I can remember doing what you've done. I can remember, man, you'd cut yourself with a knife and we had those funky looking thing you'd squeeze and it was round.
I know it. I quit doing that. I couldn't operate those things. I do it better with a knife.
But over the years, Dad's perfected this and he goes out. He doesn't Let's see. I'm trying to think of whether he rinses it off very much. He doesn't. I don't think he just shucks it. I don't even think he rinses it, frankly. I think
does he wrap them then in like a styrofoam or put them in Ziploc bags? Or what?
In Ziploc bags.
Yep.
Yeah, because I don't think he rinses it because he says when you get it out of the freezer, you have to make sure you get the hair off of it because he doesn't. I mean, because if you don't run water over it, it's kind of tough to get everything off of it.
That's right. Yeah. And he probably doesn't want that moisture in there.
Yeah, so I think I'm pretty certain that's the way he does it. It's interesting one way or the other. And you're right. If you were in looking at your sweet corn, if the field corn crop is anything like that, man.
Wow, it'll be an awesome one. It's going to be interesting to hear yields from farmers as we get going, as those combines start rolling this year.
Well, you know, I think that the one of the things that's the most interesting is that Iowa was so far ahead, and it's a darn good thing they were,
mm-hmm.
And that the weather has been so cold, I guess, would be a better way to describe it, that most of those guys are thinking their harvest is looking like it's three weeks behind now or something like that.
Well, I heard today that North Dakota, South Dakota, Southwest Minnesota, and Northwest Iowa need until September 30th without a frost. And then I heard the remainder of Minnesota and Iowa and Nebraska, they need basically to, I want to say, October 5th for their bean crops to hit full yield potential. And then I heard Southwest Wisconsin, Northwest Illinois, Northern Missouri, Ohio need it until October 10th, and the rest of Illinois and Indiana needed till October 15th. Is that true?
Well, I have.
Would you say you're that late?
I have no idea, but we are. Well, let's think about this. We are down. What'd you say for corn in central Illinois? How far?
Well, this would be beans, I think, that
over
we're talking
beans.
About. But because corn would be, you know, if you're that late on beans, then corn would be right along with it.
Yes.
I would imagine.
So when were the beans due?
Well, in Northwest Illinois,
right,
it was October 10th.
October 10th to be done. So,
and then the remainder of Illinois and Indiana, October 15th.
All right. So, well, let's add it up just offhand. So, if we are down the northern part of Illinois, I think is down 300 growing degree days with an average planting date of May 1. And in September, you pile up about 10 degrees a day. So let's say that's in the middle of the year, it's 3 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, it just gets less as you go into September.
But that's unlikely to. You'd have to have a darn warm September to double the number of growing degree days.
Exactly,
it's doing. So
well,
if you started to back figure that and say, okay, the Illinois crop, say it was actually planted May 1, that probably on average, that's early probably, but let's say it was. And even if we say May 15, and you say it was 110-day crop, so that's June 15, July 15, August 15 is 90 days. And then if you've got 110, you're to what? September 5th, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you want to add 300 growing degree days to that, or 3 weeks. So now you're at another 21 days. So you're at September 26.
Yep.
Before they can harvest, before they can think about start harvesting, before maturity hits.
Yeah.
And that's different than harvesting. So I don't know.
Well, and the thing is with beans, they go by daylight hours.
Right.
So,
well,
at some point, the
beans are going to shut down. I mean,
yeah.
The beans are going to shut down one way or the other. The corn
That's
may not,
right.
But the beans will shut down one way or the other.
Exactly. So to get to October 5th seems kind of late to me for beans. I don't know. I thought possibly, especially in Iowa, I thought if we made it to September 28th, I thought we would be pretty much okay.
I know we had a farmer at Agronomy Day. And I think he said he was done May 1. He was from Iowa, and he was up north of you. But he was in that heartland up
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was predicting it would be like October 5 before he'd start harvest.
Really?
Yeah. But of course, that was on the 16th or 17th day of August.
Right.
So I don't know.
Well, it's going to be interesting.
Yes, it will. So
it's like
been
a
good
photo
to talk
finish.
To you. It's been good to talk to you. Hey,
yeah.
Is it okay if we put this in the week? I've recorded everything here. Is it okay if I put it in the weekend newsletter?
Sure.
Okay, good enough.
Absolutely.
Hey, you have a good week.
Hey, you too.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.